Good evening, noon-ish nighttime fellow tabletop gamers. How you doing? Before we jump into episode 29, I need to tell you again about Extra Life. That is the charity project that I am working with, along with some fabulous team members for Team Troll. We are raising money for children's hospitals across the United States. How are we going to do that? By the crazy, crazy idea of playing board games for 24 hours in a row. That's right, November 2nd, we will start sometime in the morning. It's going to be going on here at Casa de Indie Talks. It will also be going on at four or five other remote locations. Lots of people will be getting together. We'll be playing all kinds of board games for 24 hours, and people are sponsoring us to do so. So, if you have the urge to sponsor us, please go to extra-life.org and either search for Ben Gerber, that's me, or look for Team Troll, and feel free to drop $1, $5, $20, whatever you can spare on any of our team members. Every single dollar that we raise goes directly to the children's hospitals and is also 100% tax deductible. That's right. Extra Life is one of those fancy schmancy charities where you can deduct everything you donate from your taxes. I also need to thank a couple of publishers today, people who actually make these board games for us to play. I've reached out to a whole bunch of publishers and asked them to support me in what amounts to prize support, figuring I'd turn this into a little miniature convention to encourage people to play and to donate money. So, today I want to thank Victory Point Games, and I want to also call your attention to a couple of the games that they have out there. Darkest Night, which looks like a fantastic co-op set in a fantasy world, and Tenka, which is a fast-paced card game set in medieval Japan. So if you're into either of those things, go to victorypointgames.com and check them out, or check out the show notes. I'll have links in there as well. I also wanted to thank the folks at Looney Labs, who sent us so much Flux stuff that I frankly don't know what to do with it. We are going to be giving a bunch of that away. We may play the new Flux board game and then give that away. And I'm certainly going to be sending some of these things to my pals on the Troll team, Team Troll, who are helping me out with this charity. So thanks so much. We'll get on to episode 29 just as soon as we can. Shh! Did you smell that? That smells like off-gassing from a brand new set of cards. And you know what that means? A new game. Folks, I am super excited to let you all know that my card game, Fools, is now available at The Game Crafter. This is a 64-card deck that I put together. I playtested this game, I've modified this game, I've talked to various different folks in the industries about this game, taken their suggestions to heart, had a lot of other people playtest it. I've gone back and revised, I've revised again, I've added new artwork, I've switched things around, I've put it out in front of lots of folks to take a look at, and finally, as of right now, this game is available to purchase. You can go to thegamecrafter.com/games/fools-, and that's it. Because in my infinite wisdom, I named it Fools with an exclamation point, which in URL speak, I guess, ends up as a dash. Can't put exclamation points up there and have it work on the Game Crafter. Anyways, 64 cards. It is $12.99 plus shipping to get it. The game plays in 30 minutes or less, 2 to 4 players, ages 10 plus. Because of legal reasons, I guess, the Game Crafter won't let me say anything less than 12 plus, but really it's 10 plus, maybe 9 or 8 if your kids are good at games. What is it? It's a quick little game where it takes place in the land of fairy, and what they have done is every year they have this huge mock tournament where all the different fairies fight, and whoever comes out on top, well, they carry the day. But in the land of fairy, you don't come out on top by scoring as many victories as you do as doing it and looking good while you're doing it. However, to screw things up, the Lords of Fairies have also abducted about 4 human fools and thrown them into the mix. They could be the generals of your armies. You could slip them into other folks' armies and really screw them. It's that kind of game. Still fun for the family, though. Basically, what you do is you are presented with a bunch of fairies in your army that you cannot look at. And then those are face-down cards, and then those are your armies. You also draw a hand of 3 cards, and these represent the fairies and fools that you can use to either strengthen your own army or hinder your enemy's armies. You can play cards as standard bearers, and some cards have special effects when you do so. It essentially adds a card to your army. Then you are required to replace one of your enemy's cards with a card from your hand without looking at it. You go all the way around the board doing this. They may then replace one of their cards in their own army, and it just goes around the table with folks replacing cards until everybody has had a chance to replace cards with cards that they have in their hands. Gives you a chance to pick up something new, gives you a chance to put down something maybe not so good in another player's army, or try and bluff them into getting that card up. At the end of each turn, your hand is discarded, you just throw it away, you flip over your army, and then you add up the points that you have there for your various fairies. Each fairy comes with a different point value, some low, some high. You add your standard bearer to this, whoever has the best scoring army carries that battle. When you're playing with two players, you're going to go up to 5 victory points. And you snag whoever was one of the enemy standard bearers as a little note that you have scored a victory point. When you're playing with more players, you get 3 players, you're scoring 4 victory points, and 4 players, you're scoring 3 victory points to win the game. I tried to design a game that would fit into the same basic space as Zombie Dice, just to be a little bit more strategy influence and a little bit less push your luck. There's a pretty steep bluffing element in here if you're with the right crowd, and of course there's a lot of luck as well. Plus, it fits handily into your back pocket or into your bag, so feel free to play it at conventions. Check it out at trollitc.com or thegamecrafter.com/games/fools-nothing. And now, with no ados in sight, I bring you Indie Talks episode number 29 with F. Douglas Wall. Hello, folks, and welcome to episode 29. I am your host, Ben Gerber, and I am joined today by F. Douglas Wall. Doug, how are you?
Hey, doing all right. Glad to be here, Ben.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me. And tonight we're going to talk about Adventures in Oz, a fantasy role-playing Beyond the Yellow Brick Road, which is your flagship product. It's a bestseller on DriveThruRPG. But a little bit like the movie, we're gonna go the other way. Though we're gonna go from full color broadcast right here. We're gonna cut back into black and white, and we're gonna step back through the past of F. Douglas Wall. And just to add a little bit here as well, this is not the first time I've been on a Hangout Live with Doug. We did another one too with Pete Figtree, where we were talking about self-publishing and pay what you want and all that fun stuff. So we may go back and touch on that a little bit too, but the question I'm most interested in hearing an answer to right now is, how did you get started in gaming? What got you role-playing and tabletoping?
Believe it or not, my wife. Well, she wasn't my wife then. We've only been married for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But back when we were still friends and still just kind of feeling each other out, she had a copy of GURPS Wild Cards. If you remember... Mm-hmm. The Wild Cards novel series had the RPG adaptation for GURPS, Steve Jackson Games. She was more of a fan of the novel series than she was an actual gamer at that point. But that book, you know, got me. You know, it's one thing to have, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, characters that have their strength scores listed and whatnot, but to actually understand what the strength score means was something else entirely. And I just kind of had to have that extra bit of information, and so GURPS was actually one of the first systems that I bought into.
And when was this, roughly?
I met her back in 1998.
So you didn't get into role-playing in 2008 and then publish this in 2010. You had a little bit of experience in playing.
A little bit, yeah. First RPG I actually played, I would actually say would be Rollmaster, though.
That's jumping into the deep end there.
Thankfully I did not have to make my own character. I was just joining up with a new group of fellas I had met over the internet in the LA area, where my wife was going to school. We had apparently missed the character creation session, and They needed a spreadsheet anyway
Yeah,
to make characters.
that was what you would call a. I mean, people talk about like the chunkiness of a system, and that was like walking across Legos to me. I enjoy a lot of aspects of that system, but I think I made a lot of characters, and friends and I discussed a lot of options and talked a lot about what we want to do with the game. But I don't think we ever actually got a game off the ground, because we'd always just end up going back to one of the simpler systems that we were playing. So that and Ars Magica, those are two systems that I'd love and I really want to play, but I've never actually sat down and played. So what did you do after that? Have you moved on to any of the more traditional, I don't want to say mainstream role-playing games, but Dungeons and Dragons-y kind of things, or did you stick with GURPS, or where did you go?
Let's see, after that, I think that the next, when I first got into gaming a little bit more intently, a little bit more long term, it was probably around 2000 when third edition D&D came out. So
Excellent.
yeah, that got a lot of people started.
I remember that very well because the book came with a CD that had the character creator in it when you got the player's handbook. And at the time, I was
Yeah.
working an overnight job where I worked 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And there wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on while I was there. So I spent probably a good month just making different characters and seeing what happened when I got them all the way up to level 20 and fooling around with that, sort of in the pre-Pathfinder days before we went over to Pathfinder and tried that. Cool. So you've been gaming for, whoa, geez, what, 14 years now? 14, 15 years?
Something like that,
Yeah.
yeah.
So what was the urge that made you decide to sit down and say, I think I might make a role-playing game? Were you personally sucked up by some sort of weather phenomena and deposited in a strange realm, or did this come out of nowhere, or had you always kind of wanted to write? What drove you towards making Adventures in Oz?
I think of it as a midlife crisis. I realized that I had been, that I was turning 30, back in 2008. I was turning 30, and most of my work experience was I was working in a fast food place. And I'm like, okay, so this is the point in my life where I should be, deciding, what I am going to be doing for the rest of my life. And the things that I had been preparing myself for, was either, flipping burgers and gaming. So I was like, okay, so can I actually make a go of this gaming thing? Can I design my own RPG? Can I publish it? Can I actually make this happen?
I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, and that was the astounding thing. As I looked into it, the barriers were dropping dramatically, in terms of what an individual person with not a lot of money was really able to do.
Yeah. Now you published this in 2010. Give me the date. You mentioned the date earlier.
Yes, it was May 15th, 2010. That was which is actually L. Frank Baum's birthday.
Perfect day to launch this. How much development did you do? How much writing and playing did you do prior to May 15th of 2010?
I had done quite a bit of writing. 2008, as I said, is when I made the decision that I was going to do this. I finalized the text in 2009 after a playtest campaign with my regular group, and we had a lot of fun. And it was actually one of my players in that campaign who wrote the really, really fantastic adventure at the end of the book, The Jaded City of Oz.
Chris
Devil
Newton,
Worthington.
right?
Chris Newton is his name, yes. And he contributed the adventure. And then getting all the art and layout finalized took a little more time.
It
And
always does, yeah.
yeah, and so finally, the beginning of May, I got my files all together and uploaded to Lulu. I ordered my proof copy. It arrived, and May 15th, I figured it was a good day. I went live.
Excellent. Now, did you first publish it on Lulu, just Lulu?
Just Lulu. That's where I had everything set up.
And for folks that don't know, Lulu.com is what we're talking about. It's a great place for independent authors to go and publish both digital and they also have a print on demand arm, don't they? So you can do physical printing on demand copies as well.
Yeah, that was the initial format I released was print copies via Lulu. I had wanted to do a separate layout for the PDF. Because the original book format, actually, for those who have the webcam, you can see it right here, was 6x9 for the PDF. I wanted to do something that was 8.5x11, so that it could be printed out on a standard printer. That was convenient to read on a screen without too much, scroll down, scroll
Right,
over, scroll
right.
back up, and then scroll down to read. So I went with a landscape format. I went with a longer page that was shorter and with two columns. So as you're reading, you just scroll over.
Yeah, and it works very
And
well.
well, oh yeah. But that took a little more time to do. I wasn't able to get that to do a release of that until September 2010. And that took a little longer to get finalized.
Now it's I won't say it's easy, but the and I won't say it's the easiest part either, but the first, before you can think about going out and publishing one of these things, you have to have the thing to publish. So you have written this thing, and now you're sitting there with, I don't know, a Word document, a notepad full of stuff, however it is that you've decided to write this. You're using VI, whatever it is, and you need to get it into some readable format. And if you want to make it exciting, you have to have a couple of pieces of art in there as well. How did you go about deciding how to do the layout, who is going to do the layout, and how did you find art for this? Hello.
The myth. My lovely wife. Let's see, in terms of art, let's see. I think initially I posted an open call on RPGNet. So I looked around DeviantArt. I found some people I was interested in, but I was having trouble with the price. Because, as I mentioned, Burger Flipper. So not necessarily rolling in the dough there.
I've stumbled into that as well. When I first started publishing, I found all these folks on DeviantArt whose art was really top-notch, and I thought they'd be really excellent additions to my game. And then I started looking at some of the prices, and I realized that yes, they would be wonderful additions to my game, but it would be four times the production cost to get one piece from one of these people. So.
But our RPGNet was much more fruitful. Not only do you get people who are used to working in RPGs, well, that's really one of the big bonuses, because they know what your margins are looking like and what they can reasonably get from you. So they do tend to be very reasonably priced, much more reasonably priced.
I think there's also that extra bit where they know they've seen RPG books and they kind of know how art is going to work in them. And, unless you're Wizards of the Coast or something like that, you're not going to be hiring people to do huge paintings, which you're going to digitally master and then transfer into the cover of your book or something like that. So it's nice to have folks that understand what the physical media is going to be when it's finished. Cool. So how did you get the layout done? Is this something that you worked on yourself? Did you bring somebody else in to do it for both the physical print copy and the PDF copy?
I actually hired someone who was actually the wife of one of the artists I was using.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
Husband and wife team.
I've got to say, both of them did really top-notch work, both in the art and in the layout. They really pulled it off.
Yeah, the book's really easy to read, looks really, really cool, and the physical book too. And when I first started getting into this, I did not like that size format, but the more I see it, especially when you're, and I know this sounds a little strange, but when you're working on a game that may also involve kids playing the game, the smaller format is really just friendlier. It's easier for them to handle, and for it's easier for me to stick into a backpack and carry around. And I like what you can do, with those smaller layouts. So you have to be a little bit more economical and get everything to fit in there, you know, in that that 6x9 size. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. That was an interesting choice. Why did you choose to do that when you first went to print?
The main reason is my initial plan, which has not fully come into fruition, was to publish Adventures in Oz, and then also my own edition of The Wizard of Oz. Since the text is in the public domain, you can do that. And I was, you know, hiring artists anyway, so I said, okay, if I can, you know, kind of double up on this, you know, and get illustrations for this and illustrations for that, then, you know, it should be a fairly easy thing. So I wanted both books to be formatted somewhat similarly, and doing the great big 8.5x11, you know, standard RPG size, I didn't really think fit for The Wizard of Oz,
right.
doing that book.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly something that I have never had to consider. That's an interesting interesting place to come from. So is the book something that you're still working on?
It's one of those waiting on the money kind of things.
Yeah.
I was hoping, you know, once I get the first thing out, then that'll bring in money that'll help me develop the next thing. But it's actually been a bit slower than that. I actually needed the big initial push of awareness that the book got when I first released.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I needed that to actually pay off the last little bits of art.
Right.
That had been done. And
And life has a way of happening too sometimes.
Ah, yes. That is very very unfortunately true.
Yeah. So the big question that I have for you about this whole game is, and we'll go a little bit into the system, but why Oz? Why did you choose Oz?
I was actually, I've always been, you know, a very big reader. So I had read the Oz stories as a kid, both L. Frank Baum, and then at least some of Ruth Plumly Thompson, who actually continued the series after his death. And there were a couple other authors who took over once she stepped out. There are actually 40 official Oz books.
Wow, that's a lot bigger than even I anticipated. I knew there were a bunch out there, but not 40.
Yeah, and in doing Adventures in Oz, I just focused on L. Frank Baum's work, which was 14, the first 14 of those. But you know, having read those, you know, it's always interesting to see what other people are doing. And I had found a trade paperbacks of the Dark Oz series that was done by Caliber Comics back in the 90s. And it was this very, very dark, very gritty version of Oz that had been conquered by the Gnome King. And so all of everybody's favorite Oz characters are freedom fighters. And it was this very, very action movie portrayal of Oz. And I'm just like, wait a sec, that's not really the Oz that I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the facts are right, a lot of the characters are there.
Right.
But that tone just isn't there. And so, you know, with my history with gaming, I suddenly started thinking, okay, how do I recreate that tone in game rules? And that was kind of the smallest seed of the project.
Huh. That's cool. That's what got you running, basically, with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Now, I was looking through the system a little bit, and we had talked just a little bit before we actually started recording, and you had come up with the system, designed it yourself, and, you know, based it on a few other things that we can get into in a minute. But one of the things that I really kind of liked was looking through the types of characters that you can play and seeing things like small animals, so the picture of, you know, Toto, or Bellina, the chicken. Or you can play, you know, an empress or a noble or a constructed person or a medium or a large animal. Or, I mean, the scope is pretty unlimited as to what you can play, and I can see where that could be appealing to both kids and adults. Now, are all of these are based on characters from the as you said, the first 14 books, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So as you're looking through too, as you're reading through the game material, you start coming upon some familiar friends as well. You can see them in the images, and you talk a little bit about Dorothy Gale and what he's doing now, and Toto and how he's gotten the ability to speak. So even if people are not really familiar with Oz outside of, say, you know, the movie, the big movie, or even the new movie that recently came out, they're going to recognize an awful lot about this when they page through the game as well. So tell me a little bit about the system. How did you come up with it, and why did you decide to implement it here at Oz?
Let's see. In terms of the system, I went with a template-based creation system. Rather than just a freeform point system, because, as I said, I wanted to recreate that tone. I wanted people thinking in terms of the characters that they were familiar with.
Right.
Already. If you want to play Dorothy, here's the Child in Oz template. If you want to play Toto, yes, Toto is totally playable as a character. if you wanted to. If you wanted to play, a character like Toto, there's the small animal template. If you wanted to play the Cowardly Lion, there's a template for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately wanted to help focus the player's imagination on those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell me a little bit about how it works. How do you create a character? Just run me through real quick making a character. Let's go to the book. Oh, yeah. I thought you were reaching for the book, but there's a cat there.
Yeah, there's a cat in my lap right now. but I do, of course, have the book handy.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I wanted to create a character, I look over my templates and I decide which character I want to play. Say I want to do a Child in Oz, a Dorothy character. I have six basic skills, and also my size trait are set.
Mm-hmm.
There's athletics, awareness, brains, presence, sneaking, and wit. And then there are also traits. The Child in Oz template does not come with any traits,
mm-hmm.
Though then when you move into the customization portion, then you can spend some of your points on traits.
Right.
So, for example, if my concept went just a little bit out there, and it's like, instead of just Dorothy, I wanted to say do the Tin Man's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I could actually purchase the crafted trait.
Hmm.
So that my Child in Oz is now crafted. She's made of an inorganic material.
Right, right. That's cool.
Or there are also skill traits, which is how I incorporated a little bit more of a specialized skill system.
Yeah.
Into the book is you have the ability to pick up a skill trait like craftsman. When I have a write-up for Dorothy that actually includes the craftsman sewing trait.
Hmm, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, of course, being a 1900s Kansas girl, she was rather adept with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if you actually read the book, Dorothy is the person who sews the wizard's balloon that he uses to escape from Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured that was an important enough trait that it was worth putting on Dorothy's character sheet. So there are traits. You can also increase some of the basic skills.
Yeah.
Each template has certain values set in the basic skills, and you can use your limited number of points to raise one of those, or do the traits as we discussed. And then your character gets to pick a specialization on one of their skills.
Okay.
Which has a mechanical bonus.
Now, is that what you're talking about when I was reading through and it mentions, like, say you're playing one of the guards and their specialization might be running away, which you tie into athletics, something along those lines?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And so you've got your skill points spent, you've got your specialization chosen, and then the next step is to choose your friends. Now, everybody in your adventuring party, everyone else at the every other character being played by someone at the table, automatically goes on your friends list.
Yeah.
But each player also gets the ability to choose one friend who is not part of that.
So somebody else out in the wider world of Oz that they can call on to, I don't know, maybe get a favor or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Someone that they can help or that they can get help from.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the Oz points, and a starting character starts with as many Oz points as they have friends currently on their list.
Mm-hmm.
And the really fun thing, and the thing that really makes that Oz. Branching off of character creation, going into actual mechanics, is that whole idea of friendship, that when you help someone out in the world, you know, you can add them to your friends list, and every time you help someone, if they're already on your friends list,
mm-hmm.
you know, you get an Oz point. If they're not on your friends list yet, you have the option of adding them to your friends list. When you get the Oz point.
Hmm. That's cool. And then that increases... Mm-hmm. I can see how that really would drive the players into getting... to feeling more connected with the world that the narrator, the person running the game, is creating mm-hmm. for them. Because they're actually literally going out into this world and making friends with some of the denizens and the NPCs and the supporting cast that live out there. And that's a concept that you don't find in a lot of other games. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then once you have all of these friends and all of these Oz points, one thing that you can actually spend the Oz points to basically invoke a Deus Ex Machina mm-hmm. involving one of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one. At one point in one of the stories, the Scarecrow needs the help of someone who is really, really lazy. So in order to bribe this person into helping him, in order to convince this person to help, he has the Wizard of Oz himself on his friends list,
mm-hmm.
and so he's able to spend an Oz point to pull out of his pocket the wizard's square meal tablets. So this very, very lazy person can eat a full meal just by taking a pill, you know, an immensely labor-saving device.
Right, and that,
and that is able to induce this very, very lazy person to help him out.
That's cool. Now, not only do you have the you know, character creation and also the mechanics mm-hmm. in the game and the templates of the characters that you can play, you also have a map and a really, really full description of the world around you. And then, in the end of the book, you have an entire adventure set up with all kinds of plot hooks and other things that the narrator and folks who are playing in this game could really sink their teeth into. And I think that's a really helpful thing to have all in one package as well. That's pretty cool. Now, can you tell me a little bit about how the adventure came into the package?
Yeah. I believe we mentioned that the adventure was actually written by a friend of mine who mm-hmm. was one of the players in my playtest campaign. And while we were doing that, he had offered to run a session because he had the idea for the Jaded City,
mm-hmm.
Which is what the Jaded City of Oz, which is what the adventure is wound up being called. Now, that never wound up happening, unfortunately, but it would have been... a lot of fun, and that's. But as I was getting closer to publication and getting things more organized, he actually offered, "Hey, do you want this? I still have this idea, and it's a really good idea. Do you mind if I flesh it out and we use that as a sample adventure for the book?" And I was really quite thrilled that he would do that. And I was really very impressed with what he did. And he took the Jaded City scenario idea that he had, and then he just kind of backfilled and built this adventure, this framing story that leads up to that.
Which is pretty handy to have, too. I mean, if you have not had a lot of experience in role-playing and you picked up this book and said, this would be a good start, you know, maybe I have kids, I have a group that's interested in trying something different, or we're all just kind of new to this hobby anyways, you know, starting off with an adventure built into the book with all that backstory, and it's really well fleshed out, and that gives them a chance to sort of flex their role-playing muscles and really get into the hobby itself, not just the game.
Yeah, definitely, and that was one of my goals with the game, was not just introducing gamers to Oz, but also taking Oz fans. There actually is an Oz fandom out there, and bringing them into the gaming sphere.
Yeah,
and so I wanted to make sure that it was an effective introduction to both aspects.
I think it came off very well. I mean, it's an eminently playable game, and it also has a lot of that same you can do anything if you put your mind to it sort of flavor of Oz. And one of the things that I like about it too, and a lot of the other reviewers who have reviewed this have been mentioning this as well, is that it's a very friendly system. It's not a, and you mentioned this as well, you know, you're out there making friends and helping people and adding them to your friends list and earning your Oz points, but it's not about going out and exterminating a layer of orcs or a layer of flying monkeys, as it may be. In this game, it's more about going out there and making sure that things get done and that you get the results that you want and helping other characters and player characters along the way as well, which makes it a nice, easy system to get kids into as well. And I'm speaking as a father here. I have two daughters, because I don't have to explain the whole, well, this is why you want to go kill orcs. I know why they want to go kill orcs. They have no idea. They you know, they're 7 and 10 years old. They shouldn't really be thinking about running out and killing a whole bunch of orcs. So I like the fact that I could hand this system to them and get them playing it, and their focus is going to be on finishing everything and making friends. You know, so I commend you on that. That's cool.
Oh, thank you. And you are going to run into a couple of problems if you do decide to go around killing orcs with this system, because death is off the table.
Right.
Nobody dies. And depending on how you want to play that, it can get very, very interesting.
Sure.
Because
You're not killing the bad guy. You're just inconveniencing him.
Yeah, you're whacking him over the head. I think one of my favorite metaphors to describe combat in the Oz series, in the stories themselves, is the protagonist giving the bad guy a spanking. You know, it's not about, you know, and stay down. It's about making him stop misbehaving.
Right, right. I would pay a lot of money to buy a copy of any modern DC or Marvel comic book that featured an arch-villain getting put in their place by a spanking, as opposed to, you know, some massive beatdown or being imprisoned somewhere or sent to another dimension or something like that. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Though that does just make me think of Squirrel Girl, Marvel character who is supposedly on the list of people who have actually beaten Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
I don't know the precise details, but it seems like it would fit right in that sort of scenario.
That would be pretty cool. I can see my girls playing the system and enjoying it. And they both, my oldest likes the movie, my youngest, and she likes the books too. She's been getting into the original books. She's read the first three or four of them. My youngest is terrified of the Wicked Witch, but on the whole, you know, seems to like the movie. So you published this in 2010, and it's gotten really good reviews. It's a bestseller on DriveThruRPG, which is really cool. And I was sort of paging through your blog, just kind of seeing what you've been up to lately, and I noticed mention of the Wizard's Magic Bag. What is the Wizard's Magic Bag?
It's actually a magic supplement. Goes into a little bit more depth on the magic system, provides some options, some additional options, and it actually does fill in one thing that was regrettably lacking in the core book, which was an example of how the magic system actually works, an example of spell casting.
Right.
And so I definitely want to include that and add some clarity to the existing magic rules before I start adding things. And also, it's got write-ups on pretty much every magic item from the series.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, there's a nice little smattering in the core book. There was the silver shoes, aka ruby slippers.
Yeah.
And the Shaggy Man's love magnet. These are just items in the core book.
But, right.
The golden cap that the witch used to control the flying monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
In the Wizard's Magic Bag, I'm going into more depth on more magic items like the Powder of Life, which turned up relatively frequently. Which actually has the magical ability to bring something to life.
Now, is this I can see also as another hook for folks of involved in Oz fandom who aren't really, who may never actually roleplay, but they may want these books because it's another aspect of the world, and it's a little more of a behind-the-scenes look as well, because in putting these things into a game, you have to give the people playing the game some way to measure them and use them. And that's, in the Oz books, it may not say, well, this is how this thing was made, and this is how you use it, and this is what it costs you to use it, or this is what the effects are, things like you kind of have to puzzle that out by either reading in between the lines or a little bit of backstory. So I think this is kind of a cool addition to the whole Oz canon too. Have you ever gotten any feedback from somebody who's not really a gamer but who's just picked up the book or read the book?
Jared Davis, who is a rather notable Oz fan, has the Royal Blog of Oz, the Royal Podcast of Oz. Back in 2009, when I was just putting the last finishing touches on the game, he actually interviewed me on his podcast.
Excellent.
In my initial release, I sent him a complimentary copy of the book, and he put a review on the Royal Blog of Oz, and it was a generally positive review.
Excellent.
And he noted how approachable it was from his vantage point of not being a gamer but being an Oz fan.
Right. Right. It's definitely written and constructed in a way where not being a gamer isn't going to impede you from reading through it and getting a lot of enjoyment out of it, which is another kudos to you as well, because there aren't a lot of gaming books out there that do that. usually it's a nice light introduction chapter and then boom, mechanics. I can only think of a very few out there that that lead in and continue through the whole thing as sort of almost a storytelling, even as you're reading through how to play the game or some of the heftier mechanical kind of things. So kudos to you there as well. That's a very well-constructed book. And for folks out there who are Oz fans, who are role-playing fans, who want to get into the world of Oz, highly recommend looking at this. Now, you can buy it on Lulu.com. You can also purchase it through DriveThruRPG or RPG Now, and all of their affiliates. And you've done something that I've done recently as well too, which I saw that you now have. $6.99 for the PDF, you can pay what you want as well. You now have a pay what you want option on there too. What made you decide to do that? Or you can also spend $14.99 and get the PDF and a soft cover as well.
Yeah. The print book is $14.99 where available. It's also available on Amazon.
Yep, through Lulu, right?
CreateSpace.
CreateSpace, excellent. Yeah.
CreateSpace is an Amazon company, so they offer free access to Amazon. Pay what you want. Now, as we are acknowledging, it's been about 3 years since my initial release, and while I'm still trying to get people out there to play the game, there's still something of a feeling that the initial sexiness is gone.
yeah.
If you will, and there have been times where I've kind of debated just kind of putting it out to pasture, letting it be. And turning it into a free product.
Mm-hmm.
But pay what you want means that it's now free. It's I'm able to reach more customers, reach more people, and get them interested in the game.
Right.
Without necessarily making it explicitly free.
Sure,
they can get it for free. But if they like it, there's a tip jar for them.
Right. Absolutely. I am in favor of the model, although I will say the first 2 months I did really well with it. The third month, and it partially my fault as well because I was gone for half of the month and not really within reach of a computer, my sales went down right back to the level that they were before I went to pay what you want. But part of that might have been just me not barking about it all the time online and getting people to go look and say, these are pay what you want? Oh, my God, I'll pay a buck. I'll get it. So we'll have to see how this month works out now that I'm back and sort of online again. Have you noticed more sales? Have you noticed less sales? Have they stayed about the same? Not necessarily revenue, but how many people are out there getting your book?
I have noticed an uptick in downloads. I'll definitely say that. Especially on RPG Now, DriveThruRPG, because of how they set up Pay What You Want, since I already had the print option, I had to do a create another product, create another item listing in order to do the Pay What You Want. And the small advantage of that was that put me right up at the top of the list of newest releases.
Yeah.
So not only do I get the sexy of pay what you want, yay, pay what you want, but also, yay, look, it's on the front page.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, well, I'm really honestly hoping that this podcast here will get a few folks to look at it as well. It's a very well-executed and very well-written system that is super accessible, and I don't think I would have any problem getting my 10-year-old into it to play it, and I don't think I would have much of a problem getting my 7-year-old into play it as well with a little bit of hand-holding. So if you have kids and you're looking for a really cool way to get them into role-playing, what better way than to put The Wizard of Oz on, let them watch it, give them a couple of copies of the book, and say, hey, how would you like to go adventure in this land? I mean, for me, if I was 10 years old again, it wouldn't have gotten much better than that. That would have been pretty freaking awesome. We do have to wrap things up here, Doug. I just want to ask you, is there any place that you want to point people to online? I will have links to your blog and to where you can purchase these in the show notes. Anywhere else people should go and look?
Let's see. Any other... where to buy the book, my blog website, that's the big one. I do have a Facebook fan page.
Oh, excellent.
So if people want to, search out Adventures in Oz Fantasy Role-Playing Beyond the Yellowbrook Road on Facebook, it'd be a hoot. I've only got about 100 fans. And since this is going out pretty quick, I think I can think keep things rather topical.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard, the original Wizard of Oz 1939 movie has been remastered in IMAX 3D.
Ooh.
And it's going to be out starting September 20th for 1 week only.
Wow. That's the day after this podcast will go out. So perfect timing.
Oh, yeah. So, And what better way to get the kids just thoroughly jazzed about Oz, and then especially with the PDF, you can just download that right into your to your iPad, or whatever, and start running the included adventure right there.
I've got an even better idea than that. Building on that exactly is bringing them to the IMAX theater and immersing your kids in this world, and then bringing them home. And then showing them the book and handing them a copy of the book and saying, now we get to play in this world. It takes what I was just talking about, what I would have loved to have done if I was a kid again, and IMAXes the hell out of it, basically. So that would be pretty cool. So there you go, folks. That's what you need to do. Go get your IMAX tickets and grab a copy of the book. If you're Prime, and this is one of the things that I love about Amazon, if you're an Amazon Prime member, even with their print-on-demand stuff, you can go get Adventures in Oz, and they'll ship it out to you. You'll get it in 2 or 3 days. So I've done that with some of the things that I have on there just to test it out, and it actually works. So you still have time to buy your movie tickets and still hand them a copy of the book when you get home from the movie. It wouldn't get cooler than that. Doug, we do have to wrap things up. I want to thank you very much for joining me here on Indie Talks, and I look forward to hearing more about the Wizard's Magic Bag.
Yeah, that is going to layout pretty darn quick.
Excellent.
And once we get the art and layout done, hopefully by Halloween, at worst by Christmas.
Cool. Very two good seasons to release role-playing supplements about Oz. Awesome. Thanks, Doug, for joining me.
All right, no problem. Thank you.